Okay, the time is 3 o'clock. We'll call this Coachella Valley Power Agency meeting to order. My name is Councilmember Furman. I'll be chairing the meeting. Could I get a roll call, please?
City of Indio?
Present.
City of Oquita? Present. County of Riverside?
Here.
Chair, we have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Okay, now next item is Pledge of Allegiance. If I can have our supervisor lead us in the pledge.
Thank you, sir. Please join me in saluting our nation's flag.
Thank you, everyone.
Spiffy, dude.
I was going to say the same thing.
So we'll move on to the next item. The next item is agenda modifications. Do we have any modifications? Okay, we'll move on to the next item, which is item 5, public comments. On the agenda items, do we have any public comments?
Chair, I didn't receive any.
Oh, public comments, okay. We'll move on to item 6, which is board or executive director comments. Do you have any comments from our executive director?
Just to let you know a little bit about our process, which might be a little different in the summer than it is other times of the year. I see Brian Montgomery, Indio's city manager here, and I know John McMillan's busy back at City Hall, and Juan Perez is probably watching us virtually from somewhere. Just to let you, Chair, and the rest of the board know that what we're going to be doing is, and have been doing, is meeting with the three of them before and sometimes after each one of these meetings, set the agenda, go over priorities and action items to pull this together and make sure that you've got your staff in each of the cities and the county well aware of how we're going to move forward with the organization. So just a heads up on process.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Okay, do we have any comments from board members?
I would just like to remind everybody that this Wednesday, July 30th, from 5 a.m. to Thursday at 5 a.m., the intersection of Washington and Highway 111 will be completely shut down for 24 hours. There are other routes, but completely. That way, Granite can get that entire intersection done as part of the repavement project of Highway 111. So tell your friends. I'm sure I'll hear about it at about 7 a.m. on Wednesday night. But
line everybody up.
That'll probably come for meeting. Well, it's good to see that being done. It's
yeah.
A lot of good work. Okay, so no comment, Supervisor?
This is exciting. Thank you so much. And we finally are at this place. Got a lot of work to do in front of us, but looking forward to it.
Yeah. All right, thank you. We'll continue on to item number 7, which is our consent calendar. If no one will pull the item, so I'll entertain a motion.
The Quinta moves approval.
Second.
You got a motion from the Quinta, second from the county. Can I get a vote, please? All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any nays? Abstentions? Consent calendar passes. Okay, item number 7.1 is items held over for the consent calendar, which is none. So we'll move on to item number 8, which is a discussion item. It is a presentation, an overview of the Coachella Valley infrastructure needs and opportunities. That will be done by Ms. Jamie Ashbury, the IID General Manager. Welcome, Ms. Ashbury.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. Initially, not going to be one making a presentation today. We're going to have our IID's outside consultant, Cameron Butcher, do it. He's been very involved with IID engineering staff and with the municipalities and working on growth potential and meeting the needs. So I'm going to turn it over to him for the presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the CVPA. My name is Cameron Butcher. I'm an outside consultant, outside counsel for Imperial Irrigation District, focused on energy infrastructure initiatives here in the Coachella Valley. By way of background, I'm a former district employee. I've worked hand-in-hand with many of our engineering staff and draft staff here, have a understanding of distribution infrastructure generally, have also worked on the development side for the district and some of the historical infrastructure projects that we brought in the early 2000s that we're utilizing now for infrastructure services. Reviews to try to give you some understanding of some of the infrastructure initiatives that we have underway presently. We'll get into the details here, but there are a number of different things that we can do as an electric service utility related to infrastructure service all the way from line extensions, making connections from overhead and underground power lines that you see now, to development of new substations and other related infrastructure that are integral to power service to meet the needs of the Coachella Valley. Next slide, please. So just a little bit about IID. In terms of background, they're a vertically integrated utility. They maintain generation, transmission, and distribution assets, all as an integrated whole. So they've got a generation profile. They have existing generation plants that they operate and or have partnership interests in, transmission systems, which they utilize to import that electricity and export other electricity from other generators and merchant developers who have needs to get power from IID system to elsewhere throughout California and the Western states, as well as a distribution system, which is the majority of the focus here, which we utilize to make electric service needs from large developments all the way down to individual homeowners. That is the sort of gamut of things that we do. We are a load serving entity primarily, which means we provide retail electric service. We have obligations associated with that. They're mostly born out of the reliability and resource adequacy needs, which means the ability to meet those needs for your customers on a 24/7 basis. In addition to having enough capacity and electricity to serve our existing customers, we have to maintain a band of reliability, typically somewhere in the order of 15%, which is to ensure reliability and make sure that the systems are able to manage system spikes and other sorts of anomalies that you see, depending on weather conditions or, you know, locality, things that might drive demand. Like, for example, Coachella, for example, you have significant new demand in the area when that comes to town. And all of that is ultimately managed through a series of folks at the district that watch this on a 24/7 basis from computer screens. And they're making shifts in the system and how it's operated, both physically from that location, but also with field staff to make sure that the system is continuing to operate within its standards. We're also a balancing authority that relates to transmission service and the operation of transmission system. We are part of the Western Electricity Coordinating Council, WEC. We have a WEC designation, for example. We are a transmission service provider, transmission service owner. IID manages the transmission service, generally speaking, within its service territory. And that runs from Mexico all the way to our intertie point with Edison here on the north end of the valley, into San Diego with an intertie with ISO, all the way into Arizona with connections at WAPA, which is the federal government, and also CFE in Mexico. So these are all intertie partners. These are agencies that we coordinate with and other folks that we also have certain regulatory obligations associated with the operation of a transmission line that we coordinate with on a regular basis. In addition to that, though we are sort of an autonomous board as it relates to our electric service, generally we do have regulatory agencies that do have regulations that we are required to follow either by subscription into those agencies and or certain federal laws that would apply. Most notable here are North American Electric Reliability Corporation, NERC as we refer to it. And there's a whole certification process that goes along with that. So we have system operators, including, for example, Mr. Smelzer, who's a former system operator, who have NERC certifications, which require that they understand the dynamics of how to maintain and balance an electric service utility generally. And then we're also subject to certain FERC jurisdictional requirements and elements. We're not generally jurisdictional to FERC, but there are certain elements that we do adhere to. Again, that's the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Most of that applies on the transmission side because of the regional nature of the transmission interties that we share with so many other transmission operators. Next slide, please. Just evolution of electric service in the Coachella Valley generally, a bit of a background here. So historically, of course, it's been heavily agricultural in the eastern Coachella Valley. Significant energy demand associated with agricultural pumping and agricultural operations. But as we've seen over the years, it's been a significant ag to urban conversion where we move away from agricultural operations and into larger scale developments, typically focused on residential, but also recreational. So we have golf courses, we have wave parks, other amenities, resort hotels, and so forth, which are driving increases in electrical demand over historical. One of the things that I do want to point out here is that over the last 25 years, we have really been utilizing a significant portion of the capacity that was developed in the early to mid 2000s by the district. There were probably about 7 separate substations. So we have Shields outside of Heritage Palms. We have Francis Way just north of Sun City. We have a handful of other developments in and around La Quinta, Avenue 48, the La Quinta substation, Northview, et cetera, which were all really constructed and or reconstructed in about the early 2000s, right about 2003 to 2009, to meet a lot of the increased demand from development that we saw at that time, most of which was development that was coalescing in areas where we didn't have infrastructure historically because there hadn't been a service need. And so we, IID, built out about 250 MVA, megavar amperes, of capacity. And that has lasted, depending on which point in that timeline that you follow from, anywhere between 20 to 25 years. We're just now getting to the point of exhaustion of that latent capacity. This is key because in a few minutes, you're going to see that the totality of the infrastructure that we're proposing presently is somewhere on the order of between 275 to 330 MVA. So approximately a 25 to 30% increase of what we saw between 20 and 25 years ago over that timeline. We've also got a lot of diversity of need in terms of development here in the Coachella Valley. One of the things that we've noticed is that we'll have everything from a church down to a school, all the way to a 2-mile by 2-mile development that's going to sort of pave over the area and put in several hundred homes and other amenities. And so we have interesting clientele here in the Valley in the sense that we've got some outsized developments that sometimes do require a little more advanced planning than we have historically been able to have the benefit of. Next slide, please. This is just a quick sort of cheat sheet for understanding electrical load capacity. We hear a lot of these terms. They're thrown around regularly. I don't think they always land. We, from a planning perspective, as it relates to demand, that is how much electricity we expect your development is going to require, we think of that in terms of MVA or KVA. KVA is a kilovolt ampere, and there's approximately 1,000 kilovolts per MVA, megavolt ampere. These are just terms of art. No need to focus on these other than they'll give you some sense of barometer when we talk about capacity. You'll hear megawatts a lot. That's a quantity of energy. We typically think about that when we're talking about buying energy from an energy generator. When we're talking about demand, we think differently in terms of MVA. So your typical single family residence, we would describe about a 10 KVA unit demand. Historically, that was 6. With Title 24 and other adjustments in demand from electrical needs for a residential, we've seen that increase of about, in that instance, about 65%. So those are numbers just to give you some barometer. So when we look at big box retail, your typical target, for example, we think about 2,500 KVA, or about 2.5 MVA. And then your typical EV charging station that you're starting to see now, and this would be your typical 6 to 8 unit charging facility that you'll see sort of shoehorned into a Starbucks parking lot. Those will require anywhere between 1 to 2 MVA. So just by way of comparison, a typical EV charging station is somewhere on the order of about 100 to 200 single family residences worth of capacity on the equivalency. Next slide, please. So again, just basic summary and an outline here. The map is going to correspond to some of these projects that we'll talk about here in a few minutes. But across the valley from Thousand Palms all the way down to our Avenue 58 facility and just a bit further beyond that, we've got a total estimated capacity development of about 281 to 339 KVA or MVA, of total capacity. And again, just by way of comparison, if you look at what the district had developed in the early 2000s, this is going to eclipse that by probably somewhere in the order of 35 to 40%. This total service potential is going to give you somewhere in the order of between 28,000 to almost 34,000 single family residences worth of capacity combined. As many of you are aware, the IID and the City of Indio had engaged in looking at solutions early on, and out of that was born the Joint Powers Authority, the Indio Electric Finance Authority. It's a joint powers authority between those two agencies focused on presently development of 2 new substations and what I would say 2 new substation renovations, overhauls, where we're going to take an existing substation and repurpose part of it. In total, we're looking at 7 transformers. The initial planned in service date for the first project is Q2 2026, so we're rapidly approaching that date here. Added capacity overall is just shy of 157 MVA or the approximate equivalent of nearly 16,000 single family residences. Now, those are just examples. The city may have other need, for example, big box retail, EV, et cetera, but that gives you a sense of what the order of that capacity capability looks like. Next slide, please. Cook Street Substation is a concept that we are rapidly bringing to, I would say, coalescence here. It's a concept whereby we're looking at a cost share and reservation of capacity from that facility by and amongst a consortium of agencies and developers. In this case, the City of Palm Desert, City of Rancho Mirage, the County of Riverside, and a number of developments, including the Berger Foundation, who is looking to host the site and be an integral player here, whereby they would jointly fund the development and funding of a new substation and then would receive thereby a reservation of electric capacity, essentially securing their electric needs as it relates to that substation. It would be one new substation, so it's not an overhaul. It would have scalability, so it would have an ultimate configuration for three transformers. The initial phases would be small and have the ability to add a third transformer as well as upgrade one of the initial transformers that would be installed. So we're looking at anywhere between 63, all the way to about 120 MVA, or on the order of between 6,000 to 12,000 single-family residences worth of development. Now, there is a host of planned developments in the area that range from affordable housing to retail to entertainment, et cetera. Again, just a barometer, but that gives you some sense of it. Next slide, please. Avenue 58 Substation Transform Addition would provide an opportunity between the City of La Quinta, Consortium of Developers, and the IED to expand one of its facilities, one of IED's facilities at Avenue 58. It's presently operated as part of the bulk electric system, the transmission system as we refer to it. The Avenue 58 facility for IED is a major transmission hub. It's one of the major stopping points on the transmission line from Imperial County to Riverside County before the intertie with Southern California Edison, and is operated predominantly as a transmission facility. IED has looked at the opportunities to install some distribution facilities there and did identify the ability to install one new 50 MVA transformer there that would essentially bring about 40 MVA of new capacity, or something on the equivalent of about 4,000 single family residences in the area. So there's a handful of development projects that are being proposed in the southern end of the City of La Quinta sphere, many of which are currently either in the entitlement phase or have just recently come out of. And so this is a longer term regional project that would be unique, and that would bring about the use of a transmission facility. It does create some challenges in the sense that it is, from an engineering perspective, difficult, but it's just one of the accommodations that the district is looking to make and sort of reimagining how it can utilize some of these facilities across the Coachella Valley to provide for electric service needs. Next slide, please. Marshall Substation Transformer Upgrade. So this is a customer and IID driven upgrade. So there was identified customers who are driving the need for this, but also from a system impact perspective, the district identified the desire to upgrade this substation to provide for enhanced capacity in this area going forward. This ultimately is going to be a district-driven process with cost recovery. So it's not a cost share. The district's moving ahead, is ordering the equipment, advancing the project. And as development takes place, cost recovery would be recouped from various projects seeking capacity there. This would replace one of the existing 28 MVA transformers at that substation, adding in a 50 MVA transform in its place. It's a net increase of 17.6 NVA of capacity, or again, something on the order of about 1,800 single family residences worth. And this is targeted to address some of the development need along the Washington corridor in and around the City of La Quinta, and also the Silver Rock project, which is presently has enough runway to advance its initial development needs, but this would provide significant opportunity to probably meet that out in the future. Next slide, please. The Avenue 52 feeder circuit, similarly, is an IID-driven project. This was identified based on some need for service in and around the Hideaway project in La Quinta. There is existing infrastructure. There just is not significant enough size on the infrastructure to manage the demand. So this is a project which utilizes some existing conduits and also requires some development of new conduits, whereby the district is, again, advancing the project, taking lead on ordering the equipment, making the installations, and then recovering its cost by way of a cost recovery process. For example, we had 32 residences within the Hideaway, which were precluded from taking electric service because of those constraints. This project meets more than that need. It actually is going to provide opportunities for CVWD, which I believe had a pump station of sorts, some sort of a pump project in the area, which was looking to advance, but also, again, the city of La Quinta's Silver Rock development and its initial runway needs. Again, something on the order of about 4.6 MVA of added capacity, or a rough equivalent of 460 single-family residences. And it's been successful. Of those 32 units in the Hideaway, we've had 27 who have now subscribed in advance costs to ensure that their subscriptions are going to be available in the future, in addition to some others who took the opportunity to upgrade their panel sizes on account of the fact that the capacity is available there. So that's been a very successful project for us so far, and happy to see that one moving forward. Next slide, please. That, in a nutshell, is the handful of the initiatives that we have going. There are others. There's, for example, advanced planning in and around what I would refer to as the North Indio area. It's confluence with the County of Riverside. sort of east of the Berger Foundation properties, if you will, in and around the Espana development, the many homes. We're also looking at the confluence of the areas in and around, I would say, between Madison and probably Van Buren, south of 52, north of 62, which has a significant amount of, one, focus on the confluence of the cities at that area, but also development as it's becoming sort of what's left in terms of large block areas to aggregate together. And we have some initial concepts that we've rolled out. I think the city of La Quinta has seen two substation concept ultimately that we're looking to advance on a cost structure basis there. One of the projects in that area, for example, would utilize all of the output from one of those substations alone. I think it's an equestrian related facility there that's proposed. And so the demands are pretty significant. These bits of infrastructure are not inexpensive or inconsequential, and they're not things that we plop down without serious strategy and concentration on how they ultimately are going to benefit the system from a holistic approach, which is how we operate. Substations don't work in unison. They work sort of in connection with each other. We don't want them in places where we can't make physical connections from one to the other, because ultimately that constrains our ability to maintain a reliable system. I can't shed load when I have an outage, for example, on this substation, if I don't have a connection to the other, whereby I can transfer from one to the other. So these things do require a fair bit of thinking and a fair bit of planning. We've got a lot of folks that are paying attention to this, that are engaged with your planning departments, your city managers as well. We have very, very good line of sight on these projects. The difficulty we have is figuring out where ultimately a lot of this development will coalesce in one area where it makes sense to advance projects. And that is because we have had diversity of need. You have large projects in multiple areas, and not always are their needs the same, including timeline, their ability to make funding commitments, and or the ability to get them located in a way that gives us that ability to maximize the reach of these facilities. But ultimately, I think that this is useful in that we have now sort of this group whereby we can look at the overall needs. We can identify from the perspective of what we see in comparison to what you see, where we think the sort of first movers are going to be and where we can maximize our investments and focus in terms of infrastructure. But presently, these are the matters that we're advancing. We've had very good luck so far, and I think bringing folks to the table, it's been difficult in that there have been, again, multiple parties and diversity of need, but I think ultimately infrastructure is what solves the issues that we're dealing with today. It's not a lack of electrons. As a utility, we have access to many electrons. We can go to market and get electricity to serve need. It is the size of the wires and the size of the system and the ability to flow more electrons on that system that is the difficulty right now. And that's what this is focused on. So happy to try to take any questions, but that's currently the state of things from IED's perspective.
Great. Thank you, Cameron. Great presentation. And if I can ask, can we get that to staff so we can all take a look at it after? Or is it, okay, that, after that'll work, yeah.
We have a consent.
Okay, thank you. That'd be helpful. Ask the board any questions?
Sure. So I heard you mention, first of all, I would say thank you for the presentation. Appreciate it. It's obviously, I'd always like to have a copy of what you just presented. Any other items that you think would be helpful? But I heard you mention having a 58, and I think it'd be great. I'm not sure to what degree county understands right now how far along we are, or where are we with Avenue? Was it 58? Is that what we said?
Correct. Right? Correct.
So maybe if we could schedule a briefing with county staff, specifically Juan and others will bring to the table to further understand what's going on there and what the future holds. Obviously, we have a lot of projects that are on hold as well, and it will definitely help, you know, the area quite a bit, moving all the way down to as far as North Shore, perhaps potentially, as well as Mecca and all those other areas. So just want to bring that to your attention. The other item is you mentioned the Berger Foundation. And there's been some transitions there, and I'm not being critical of the Berger Foundation because I think they've been great, but there have been some transitions. So I'm just wondering, are they still as engaged? Are they willing to go there? Because I know that things changed a bit when Doug left. But I'm just hoping that it's the case that they're willing to for their support, this effort, and I heard you say that they are, but I just have not heard from them ever since that transition happened.
Sure. So I could speak to that for a minute. So we have, IID has been engaged with the Burden Foundation and other parties, the same folks that we'd mentioned, the City of Palm Desert, City of Rancho Mirage, and a number of developments there in the county, which have electric service needs, well over a year ago. And we had been looking at that site as an alternative to another. And through that process, in lieu of going through the cost share process, whereby IID would be the main point of contact in the development of that substation, the Burger Foundation had looked at potential to go out and themselves hire a contractor to build the substation and then potentially turn it over to IID, which is something we do regularly in the transmission world. That's a model that is viable from that perspective. You know, they build it, we inspect it, and as long as it meets the specification, we accept it for dedication, something that can be done. And I think ultimately they got to a point in that process where they just felt it was best to revert back to this sort of agency to agency group process. And we've been on that, I would say, probably about the last 4 or 5 months in mass. So the agencies, at Burger Foundation folks, the district, we've been meeting regularly. Presently, we're looking to, within the next 30 to 45 days, tender what I would refer to as deal documents to everybody. So the form of cost share, reservation, and assignment forms, which would be the operative agreements, if you will, to move this thing forward. We've gone through to the point of assessing the right-of-way paths. We've done initial development diligence. We feel very good about the site. And so far, all indicators from everybody is full steam ahead. Let's get this moved along. So that's where that stands.
So to the degree that you can share any information that's not, let's say, confidential per se, and the briefing that you have with the county staff regarding 58, I think it'd be great if possible, if there is anything you can share.
Sure. So I'm happy to speak to that as well now. If Avenue 58, we had a bit of a start-stop is there as well. The Avenue 58 is a fairly targeted infrastructure project in that it was really intended to deal with some of the more immediate term need in and around the southern La Quinta area. So there's a number of projects that have been entitled, which may not have electrical capacity to meet the totality of their development needs, including some that are, let's say, halfway finished, right? So projects that started in around the early to mid 2000s, which still have lots remaining that they would like to have completed out with homes or whatever the case. And so Avenue 58 is somewhat limited, right? There's only so much capacity and we have a larger subscription there. It also is difficult in that it's a transmission facility. So if there was ever to be some sort of a transition to a standalone utility, being able to ring fence that transformer from the rest of the bulk electric system, the transmission facilities, physically just is impossible. There just isn't the room to do it and maintain all the regulatory requirements that we're obligated to adhere to. And so it was really a transition to a larger concept, which was a two substation program. And the difficulty there was, we didn't have enough subscription from development at that point. It was just a little too uncertain for some people as to where their developments were ultimately going to head, whether they would be able to get the financing by the time the project would be something that we were ready to advance. And so going from Avenue 58, which was just a little bit too small to meet everybody's needs, to something that's a two substation concept that sort of is more regional and meets almost everyone's needs was tough because it was too broad and it met too many people's needs and they just weren't ready. And so we hear you. We're happy to try to accommodate. And so we can make Avenue 58 work. And we've done that. We've gone back. We've looked at the engineering. We can make it work. It's just that facility is going to have to remain in its condition as after it's installed. And so we've retooled the deal documents to reflect that. And that's actually something we're getting ready to move out the door here shortly. So from our perspective, we've been in touch with really what I would say were the headline developers who were really driving the boat on this. And they're really, truly chomping at the bit to see this continue. So our expectation is that should be successful as well, provided it's met with the same response as it was previously. We're bringing it back, putting it back on the table. And so we're thinking that's going to meet the need.
Well, I think that's a good idea. And I think you should continue that effort. But let me just give you a different perspective as well. And that means that perhaps we need to think about it as a parallel effort where you're also talking or not talking to developers that have not move forward with anything because they just don't see that infrastructure in place. So that's why this conversation needs to be had as well with the county and with those individuals so that we can continue to move and progress, advance that effort within those communities moving forward. I don't have any disagreement at all with doing everything you can possible in the city of La Quinta, by all means, and the region there, Avenue 58. But as well, I'm also thinking about other areas in which folks have come to my attention and wondering what's going on. So that's why I bring that to your attention.
Sure.
So that's that piece of
Mr. Chairman
of that puzzle.
Well, while we're on 58, so that concept, which it's getting very close, has been really part of what our city manager has been doing to work with the developers and IAD to pull that together. And we, meaning council, has provided direction to our city manager that based on the participating developers and their token contributions of what their needs are, we would pick up the gap and then reallocate it as development furthers. If there's a county portion of that, would be happy to share that gap with Riverside County if you're so inclined to ensure that those other areas are engaged and some of that MVA is going to cover those undeveloped projects so that we're not taking all that burden.
I keep that. I hear you. I think at the end of time, by and I hear you and I appreciate that.
Our goal is we're just trying to front the money just to get stuff
going. No, I get you. And we need to pass the budget.
Welcome you to play with us.
As well. But I hear you. And so all I'm asking for is a briefing. That's it. And that'd be great information to have because maybe we do go that route and why not? And I'm looking at all the options and anything that we can do to move this forward as efficiently, as effectively as possible, let's do it. So we just have not had that conversation. And so
those comments are well timed.
We did preview this briefly with Operating Officer Mr. Perez, and so he's aware that there is something back on the table, but not the detail of it. And this is really something that's been in motion for a while, and we've just gotten back again to something more concrete. So we just haven't gotten there yet, but absolutely happy to take that back. And coordination is going to continue, particularly in that region. That was one of the areas that we'd mentioned is
sounds good
opportunity.
Not being critical, I just wanted to make sure that everyone moves along at the same pace as possible.
Sure, understood.
Yeah.
So then my only questions were on each of those projects, rough, and I know it's hard, mm-hmm. rough timing, mm-hmm. and then the IID investment that's being placed into our Riverside County jurisdiction areas based on, I think it's important for people to understand
sure.
what that is.
So off the top, so let's talk about, we'll go from Thousand Palms down to Avenue 58. So at Cook Street, we're looking to roll out deal documents shortly. IAD has actually advanced, ordered the 50 MVA transformer, which is the larger transformer there. We also have a 28 MVA transformer on order for our emergency stock. But if we have the ability to implement it at that location, depending on system condition in 2026 or 7, we have earmarked unofficially that transformer within our stock as being applicable here at this for implementation. Moving on down. Getting into that, I'll leave the city of Indio sort of off the discussion now. I'm happy to sort of detail that out if everybody would like, but into the city of La Quinta at Marshall Substation, IAD is again taking the lead, advanced procured the transformer from Marshall, which is a 50 MVA transformer. Those lead times are presently somewhere between 16 to 19 months based on the manufacturer's statements. We'll see where that goes. This particular manufacturer is one that has been outside of our typical procurement process. Historically, we've procured domestically because this is critical infrastructure. So what we refer to as CIPS, critical infrastructure protection. So we have obligations as it relates to our bulk electric transmission system. We and all transmission or transformers rather that we have here tie in at the transmission level can't share that because of the critical nature of the infrastructure and its susceptibility to terrorist acts and so forth. And so that particular facility is moving ahead. It's an existing substation, so it's not a complete revamp. So that's probably about a 6 month infrastructure implementation time from the date that the transformer arrives because there is line work that has to be done. The Avenue 52 feeder circuit is, I would say, 85% complete at this point. That's been underway since about May. And the Avenue 58 facility, no transformer has been ordered. But again, you're looking at somewhere in the order of about 16 to 19 months lead time from the date that the order is placed. And then in terms of the district's commitment, I don't know if anybody wants to speak to that. But
Supervisor Perez, I appreciate your comments today, and we did have a meeting scheduled for the 30th, but we have a Basin States meeting on the Colorado River that sort of is taking precedence over everything, but that is high on my list to get back on calendar, so we will do that. So the worst part of development is the actual development phase process. Construction is over before you blink. It's the environmental. Cook Street, the problem with that one has been the location of the site and how we were going to get the conduit out of the substation. It is a painstaking exercise to go through title documents to see who's got rights and where. We've been working very closely with the county staff, and we appreciate them very much, because a lot of what we were planning on doing was installing conduit in County Road right away, because as an irrigation district, we have a legal right to do that. And the county's been very helpful. So really, the development phase activities, when you have a brand new facility, it takes about 18 months. Your construction is very fast. It's about 6 months. So our plan is, when everything's entitled and we're ready to go, we're going to go ahead and get everything built and just waiting on those transformers, because at the end of the day, we just like to have them delivered PO. You know, we want them delivered free on board FOB at that site rather than some other location where we have to then transport them again. You have to get a special permit to move them along a highway. They have environmental components that go with it. We really just want a one and done. So that's our goal, and we're working toward that. IID, typically and historically, for a reliability margin, has retained 20% capacity in everything. And we do that. So if you have a system issue, you have enough latent capacity in the system where you can backfeed and transfer load. And that's why sometimes you have a power outage when there's a vehicle versus pole and your power goes out. And then a little bit later, it goes back on miraculously. And then a couple hours later, it goes off and back on. That's system operation switching. And those engineers deploy immediately when there's an outage, saying, well, what will the system, what can it maintain at this location? And how do we, what sort of maneuvering can we do to make sure that we install and restore power as quickly as possible while we keep the system isolated? That's why in the past, the district said development pays for development. My philosophy is load should bear its own. Native load should bear its own portion of that 20% expense. We have made the case with the IID board. We're going to have to look at that on a case-by-case basis and rate-related recovery, but that's sort of the direction that we are going. So whether the district's contribution is value-added engineering, whether it's procurement in advance, I don't know what that is going to look like. It may not be the same for every project. We're going to do it based on what the need for that individual project was. Hideaway was a really good test case for us, where the district stepped up and funded it. And at the end of the day, that was a $700,000 mitigation that facilitated 42 new homes and La Quinta, a pumping station for CVWD, and additional capacity for sort of a stagnant development. So we will continue to evaluate those, and the rate update that the board recently passed is going to make a whole lot more things possible. I hope that's helpful.
All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Cameron, for your presentation. Looking forward to moving forward, hearing more about the nuts and bolts of what we have going on. So that's just a discussion item. So we'll move on to item 8B. That's a cooperation agreement with Pearl Irrigation District, and that will be United Martinez.
Good afternoon, Chair, members of the board. Before you is the cooperation agreement with the Imperial Irrigation District. Tom had mentioned we were working on this last meeting, and we're glad we're finally at a point where we're able to present this to you. This took a lot of work, working closely with IID, so I appreciate all the work and support to make sure we have a presentable document to the board. The CVPA was created to address electrical service needs, and also elevate the voice of our member agencies through the CVPA efforts. And in order to do that and facilitate the goals and objectives that were laid out in the JPA agreement, we are going to need a cooperation agreement with the Imperial Irrigation District to do a lot of the things that were just kind of discussed: development, planning, financing infrastructure for the future. And so what we have here for you today is an umbrella agreement. You can think of it as a memorandum of understanding, kind of lays a foundational working collaborative
cooperative environment between the CVPA and the CVPA's member agencies. Again, the main goals in the JPA agreement, as you may recall, is to address electrical infrastructure needs in the Coachella Valley, address any policies that may benefit out here that may be different from Imperial Irrigation District, and also programs that may be of interest and may be feasible to implement out here in the Coachella Valley. In large, those are some of the three main elements of the CVP agreement and what we'll try to accomplish with this MOU agreement. The cooperation agreement does lay out a timeline for 5 years. That's in line with our staffing agreement and kind of our short-term goals and things we get want to establish and complete. The agreement does call for quarterly meetings. This is to facilitate communication and transparency on any potential projects or programs we may have in mind. That way, the IAD staff can hear those ideas in advance and be able to help us reach solutions should there be any issues. And I'll get more into a little bit here with how that happens. And as you see in the agreement, we can propose a number of things, proposals, which could be projects or policies or things that the CVPA board wants to address via this MOU agreement. And essentially how this would work was we would submit a proposal application to the Imperial Irrigation District, outlining what it is that we want to accomplish. The IAD will review that. And there are some timelines for that. I believe it's 60 days for proposal review for them to get back. If they need extra time, they'll let us know. But essentially, the response we'll get back from IAD once we submit a proposal would be feasible or feasible with modifications or infeasible. And there's a process to work via those three determinations. It's feasible, then we can move on to a specific project or proposal or policy application, move that forward. If it's not feasible or feasible with modifications, and the IAD will let us know what specific steps we may need to take in order to make that a feasible proposal or infeasible if a project is just not feasible, whether it be because of technical matters or financial matters. There's a number of items that are listed in the agreement that IAD takes a look at. And again, it's technical feasibility, economic feasibility. Is it alignment with the JPA goals and objectives? Does it conflict with any IAD policies or requirements? So there are a number of things they take a look before they make a determination. So the application, that proposal application, is a meat of the MOU or cooperation agreement. There is also a dispute resolution process in case we don't agree on any potential outcomes. We'll take this project by project basis. And this is pretty much standard in a lot of these MOU type of agreements in which we would try to come to a resolution via meetings that we have. And we try to resolve those within a time frame. I believe it's 30 days. If we don't achieve any advancement within, I believe it's 45 days, and we can go do our dispute resolution process. Costs will be shared equally. So there is some language to respect to that. And then there is a miscellaneous provision in the cooperation agreement. I think the one thing that I do want to highlight among the number of items that are listed there is that anything that we do here is going to be different than what IAD does in Imperial Irrigation District's Imperial Valley service area. So I think just wanted to highlight, I think that was just one of the major provisions. Again, this is an umbrella agreement that can be thought of as a foundational document, should it be approved today, that we can build on and get into more specific proposals, whether it be projects or policies or programs. Again, we will build on this agreement as we move forward. And happy to answer any questions for this cooperative agreement.
Thank you, Mr. Martinez. Questions?
In the dispute resolution section, it doesn't reference court jurisdiction, and I'd like to have that be Riverside County since we're members of Riverside County. I don't know how IAD feels about that, but if we could at least delineate the jurisdiction of which any kind of dispute, that should it go that direction to actually add a jurisdiction?
You can imagine what IAD might suggest. And we decided to leave that one aside, and it may be project by project. As I see it, and I think our legal counsel sees it, There's very little mediation risk and liability at this stage of an umbrella agreement. But if this organization were involved in perhaps funding, much like Indio does, and the financing district there, substantial infrastructure, I think we'd want to reconsider the mediation clause and what venue might be appropriate. But at this stage, we're not suggesting a specific venue. What we could do with your approval and guidance is certainly approach that subject again with IID, unless they want to comment on it now.
I would say if the resolution or the dispute is driven by us, perhaps it is in Riverside County, if it's driven by them.
If it would make everyone happier, and it would probably be better if we didn't negotiate this in a public forum, but we would prefer San Diego County. It's neutral to both of us, and we do that often. Or federal court. I have no objection to the extent they have jurisdiction.
Let's continue that piece of the puzzle. Folks don't mind just that piece.
I get the Switzerland part.
Any other questions you have?
I would say in the purpose of the agreement, which is 1.1, you know, basically talks about formalizing the parties to work together in transparency. And it talks about us taking on the portions of generation or distribution aspects related to the service within our boundaries. When we talk about these proposals, I'm assuming that we're only going to be submitting for the member jurisdictions, Indio, La Quinta, and Riverside County Incorporated.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. And any of the yes, no's, back and forths would not include unless other members join.
Correct.
You know, okay.
Only that be the member agencies, okay. Projects, proposals, et cetera, within these jurisdictional boundaries.
Okay. And then in terms of, I guess, examples of types of proposals that we might be moving forward, given that we're quarterly and we need to pass a resolution in order for you to submit, would that be at special meetings if we need to move it along?
We probably confused you. The quarterly that Amanda.
That's your executive committee. That's your staff.
Staff. You actually meet more often.
Six times.
Yeah, perhaps seven or eight times a year, and can be more regularly. And just like we do with other CBAG and other agencies, if the need arises, we'll set up a meeting. And it'll be a little easier to do with three board members than 14.
Okay. And then, I mean, I guess the obvious thing is kind of one of the reasons why we formed JPA is for governance, and it's not really addressed here. I know that we're addressing the revenue piece in the next item, which I'm happy that if they're being bifurcated on just a co-op agreement to work together. It still seems like we have a JPA here, but IID controls it from a project standpoint. No offense.
It's true. Okay. And certainly IID is conditionally allowing the CBPA to undertake and initiate certain projects and programs. And the alternative is not to have the agreement and just say that we're going to initiate and hope that they help. Okay. So there has to be a process. We have to acknowledge that there's an incumbent vertically integrated utility that's done a nice job for us for a long time here. And the CBPA would be presumably given a certain amount of governance responsibilities up to, as our GPA points out, up to potentially having a vertically integrated utility in the Coachella Valley one day.
And don't get me wrong, I'm very happy we had a separate meeting looking to do with IID. I'm happy to hear the progress and these components. Of course, you want them sooner than they're happening, but they're happening. And they're getting very creative in their solutions of looking at the bigger picture versus helping each individual project act. So, you know, I appreciate that. And it's the best it's been, I think, in a long, long time. And that's good going into this. So that's just wanting to clarify that. And then I guess there's not an amendment section. So if we get somebody else that joins us and we need to revisit these or regroup, or if we decide that something's going to change here, there's not a component that allows for an amendment with mutual agreement upon written notice and request, one of those types of things. So we can add that if we can ask.
If you approve this and give staff
direction to work with IID on an amendment process, and for that matter, a mutually agreeable approach to a venue as well. We'll come up with something together.
Okay.
I do want to note that IID has been fantastic to work with on this agreement. It was drafted a couple of months ago, and they've made substantial changes to it with our input. And I've got to acknowledge Jim had some input as well that we took to heart and addressed some of his comments, concerns as well.
And then I guess for some reason, if there needs to be a termination before the 5 years is up, I don't think there'll be a cause, but
yeah.
Maybe they need to decide on a time frame that in the event something changed, I don't know, things change. If there's an opportunity to, even though it seems very benign, there's no cost to this, but if for some reason we proceed with a direction and it is in conflict in some way, shape, or form, I don't know. I just feel like there should be an out before 5 years. Maybe after the first
Jamie?
Year or two.
I have
No objection. Yeah, I again, I've got to amend that clause to include and improve the internal. That's the section two. All right, so very quickly, thank you. I like the idea of the points that were made by the, obviously if we could make those changes and still move forward with cooperative agreement today, and vote on it, I would support that because our folks need consistency. And they need to see that. And they need to see that we're making advancements every meeting. And so if we have that social contract, if you will, that understanding that we will move in that direction, then I would support moving this item. Now, with that said, though, I'm not exactly sure if there's anything there about proxy vote or anyone being able to, let's say, be here on my behalf, but in case I might need to be somewhere else. And if that's a discussion item that we can wait on, that's okay. I'm not in a hurry to do that.
Yeah.
But I just want to put that out there. But I think what's most important is that we get this done right now and then obviously discuss those amendment items and hopefully that we integrate those sooner than later.
Supervisor, we do have under the JPA and the bylaws, we do have a provision that allows for you to identify an alternate, and it may have even been identified already by you and your office. I just can't remember if we've gotten the paperwork in. So that is a separate process. We'll follow
up.
Remember that discussion, it was you can appoint anybody in the entire Riverside County, whether they're in this jurisdiction or not. And I was opposed to that. And you have four other supervisors that are all over the place and or staff that covers lots of areas. But that was your prerogative.
Well, I definitely would want someone from Wichita.
And it just would be an elected official.
Yeah.
Anywhere.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Okay, thank you. Well, if I'm okay to move the item, then I would like to move the item knowing that there's going to be amendments coming. And that's what we agree to.
We'll pass them over yet.
And for the modification that you may want to consider is to direct staff to work with IID on three changes, amendments to the amendment, to the agreement, one addressing venue, the other addressing amendments to the agreement, and the last, an early termination provision. Mayors, did I catch them?
And you know what? And I'll go back and talk to our council too.
Supervisor, are you okay with that?
No,
so that's great. A motion. Do I have a second?
Second.
All right. That's a motion by Supervisor Perez, second by Mayor Evans. All in favor say aye.
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 Any nays? Abstentions? Motion passes. So we'll move on to item C. That is still Mr. Martinez.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, members of the board. This item relates to revenue options, and it's for the funding of the operational and administrative costs associated with the CVPA. Again, this is only for operational admin costs. We're not the budget you approved was for $500,000 for 100 days and no consultants. But wanted to provide some pictures on revenue options for you to consider to make sure that we have a...
Ma'am, just to step in, for those that may not have heard that conversation, it's not $500,000 for 100 days. It's a $500,000 budget
for the year,
and then we come back within 100 days with any potential adjustments for your consideration.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you, Tom, for that. And so we want to bring you back some revenue options to make sure that we're operating a fiscally responsible entity, and we have a balanced budget, that our revenues balance our costs. This is a quick sneak peek of the budget that we brought to you at the first meeting. Tom just clarified what the action the board took on that.
Can you go back real quick?
Sure.
This is really staggering. I like that.
And so we'll bring back something similar to this, and hopefully, yeah, more Claude. We'll bring Claude instead of me. Happy to do that. But just wanted to give you a quick sneak peek. So I know it's been a month or so, but we are looking at a number of revenue options. We work closely with IID on these. And so the simplest option was just to have membership dues, similar like you do with CVAG. That's the low-hanging fruit. And we did revenue options based on what the budget goals are. Of course, we were only asking for $1 million in our initial. And, you know, it depends how good of a job we do, we might be able to get more. I'm just kidding. But we did want to show you some revenue options based on budget levels, just to give you a sense of the range of the financial impacts. It could be whether membership dues or surcharges. And so we just divide this equally by the three member agencies. You'll see here what the cost would be to each. And so you can see equally distributed, maybe fair, but maybe not equitable on that approach. And then on the surcharges, we took a look at, just wanted to give you a quick snapshot on the methodology and an approach, very simple rudimentary math, working with IID. We took the energy sales from the 2002 LAFCO report, which were estimated just for the CVPA areas, and we divided that into the various budget levels to give us a cost per kilowatt hour. And so if we were to do that based on consumption and say, hey, this was all that was consumed, then we just divide that equal by the number of percentage of consumption in each of the cities or the county. This would be what estimated surcharge could be, or membership due, I'm sorry, based on just the consumption in each of your jurisdictional areas. So you can see there what it would be. We also took a look at the number of installations or meters in each of your jurisdictions, so City of La Quinta, City of Indio, County of Riverside, and we guesstimated what that would be. And as you can tell, it's not much different. It actually stayed the same for La Quinta, and it shifted a little bit between Riverside County and the City of Indio. Went increased a few percentage points in City of Indio. So not much of a variance, but there is some, and that's just based membership based on meters in your jurisdictional boundaries. And then we took a look at what it would require to raise the various budget levels by implementing a consumption surcharge across the board. And you can see here that it's when last time I think I used the word de minimis, and I was asked, what does that really mean? Well, here's some rough numbers on what that means. It's actually, this is in dollars. If you convert it to cents, it's 0.03 of a cent. And thanks for the place value there. And so what does that really mean for consumers, right? We went back and took a look at what the average consumption was for each of the customer classes that IID has rates for. And we multiplied that by what the surcharge would be. And you can see here that for residential customers, mobile home, all the way down the list, what that would mean at the various budget levels. So 0.0003 would be half a mil, 0.0006 would be the $1 million, and 0.009 would be 1.5, and so forth. So you can see here what the impact would be in terms of cents, specifically for residential customers. Just looking at the residential rate, the base rate right now is $19.76. If we were to move forward with the $500,000 budget, that would add, again, 0.03 cents, which is 1/1500th of a percent. So very small, not even one whole percentage point increase. And so you can see down the line what that would mean for residential customers at the various budget levels. The highest would be 19.6, going up to 19.88 cents a kilowatt hour. And if we were to take just the number of installations within the CVPA boundary and just put across the board surcharge on that, and this would be an annual surcharge. This was what the surcharge would be, the annual surcharge per installation at the various budget levels, ranging from $7.45 to $29.81 at the highest amount. Again, this is just, these are ballpark figures. Yeah, you got that one. And we would have to go back and refine these numbers once the CVPA board decides what approach they would like to take. Again, this is to make sure that we're funded, that we have the resources to do the work moving forward that the CVPA board wants to do and outline in the CVPA agreement. And it will require a little bit of work, doing some GIS work with each of the jurisdictional boundaries, making sure that we have the lines drawn out correctly, that is given to IID so they can verify those boundaries and also account for the variability in move-ins and move-outs and other kind of dynamic impacts or factors that they have to consider in determining what the final amount would be. So again, we would have to formally to move forward with a surcharge with IID, would have to formally take action, approve a board resolution, and then submit that to IID to make the request. And again, draw the boundaries, make sure they got all the right homes meters in the map, and then they'll give us what the final budget number could be. And again, this process can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months from the point in time where a resolution is passed and that request is made to IID. So it is going to take a little bit of lead time. Again, those were the five options presented to you on how we can generate some revenue to pay for the admin and operational costs of the CVPA. And so what we're asking for you today is to provide some direction. Whatever direction you do provide, we'll come back to the board at a later date with the final recommendation and the formalities necessary to take those next steps. So with that, happy to answer any questions you may have regarding the potential revenue and funding options for CVPA's first budget.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Martinez. Let's have this holistic discussion about this. We understand that services need to get paid. From NDO's perspective, with the JPA already established, we just have some heartburn imposing or asking our ratepayers for another surcharge. And I think that's understandable. So we want to see, we want to make sure whatever we do is feasible to move forward. That's my initial comment. I'll open it up to the rest of the board and see how they feel about moving forward and finding a solution to move forward.
Well, real quick, I appreciate where we are as far as the recommendations are concerned. And I don't know if there's a way to figure this out. As far as the formula, if you will, when it comes to certain areas moving forward in the future, where we have mobile home parks that are falling apart. And, or you have individuals that earn only a certain amount of money and they live paycheck by paycheck. I don't know if there's a way of figuring out how many folks there may be or how many of these mobile home, we could figure out how many mobile home parks there are. And I would assume that we could figure out how many mobile homes are in those mobile home parks. But I do wonder what would be justified, right? What would be fair? As opposed to maybe, let's say, another certain area in Coachella, in which there are areas in Coachella in which people earn a little bit more. So I'm just putting that out there. I don't expect an answer right now. I don't know what the answer would be for that. I'm just trying to figure out how we could better support our workers in that way. Something for you to consider. But I do appreciate the recommendation, Director.
Question for you on the division between the three entities. It was just Bermuda Dunes listed about 2020 mm-hmm. homes. I mean, there's a whole myriad of other residents, right, that would have to be contemplated. But just to make sure that we're not just talking about Bermuda Dunes.
No.
That was just kind of county territory. Okay.
If it's helpful,
I'm sorry. It may make a difference, Supervisor Perez. Generally, mobile home parks are master metered. So if you're looking to impose a fee per meter, that's one fee. They're going to divide that 50 cents or $5 among the meter, the sub-metered system, but it won't be everybody in that park with the same charge. If that's helpful at all to know, largely the mobile home parks we have, there are very few of them that are individually metered. Most of them are master metered. And we do have programs, and this is one of the initiatives that we're working on through other avenues with public benefits dollars, that the district may be able to provide some assistance in that as well. But I wanted to give you just a bit of comfort as we go through that, because we were mindful of that as we were working with Emmanuel.
I would agree with Wayne, and I know Wayne and Stephen, they've already implemented surcharges there, I think, a couple of times, right, twice, and that's a long process, and I'm not prepared to impose that on our residents in La Quinta without kind of due process of their awareness of that. I know it's not a rate hike, but it'll be a rate hike because the rates have already gone up and they're going to continue to go up. And the metering thing, there's so much variation, and I'd rather be able to control the fact that the members are working directly with CVAG on the budget side. We approved $500,000 the last meeting, right? So, you know, La Quinta would support the member contributions that are evenly distributed, the 166,666 per member. So I'd move to approve that.
My question would be, looking at the budget, how could each entity, take on some more responsibility to ease some of the budget, whether it's Indio, La Quinta, or the county? Would that be feasible as well? Is that something that we could look back and come back to just explore?
So it goes back to the pie chart outline.
Yeah,
that we could absorb is what you're proposing, Wayne. Yes. So we're lessening that cost, because again, we should only be focusing on $500,000 to start.
Yes,
exactly. So you present something, and we have to approve an increase.
You could do that. There's no perfect way to do this, mm-hmm. and one way to think about it is, whatever it is, do it only for a year and don't establish a precedent. I could argue each one of these. There's a logic to each one of these approaches. Even just a three-way split and revisit it in 6 months. The surcharge has a certain elegance because the ratepayers presumably are benefiting. And that said, if the only thing CVPA works on for the next 5 years is perhaps distribution issues outside of Indio, is it fair that Indio ratepayers are paying for the and keep the lights right. on and the efforts?
That would be my
point. I would just recommend whatever you do, make it very clear this is a provisional approach, a one-year approach. And yes, we would calibrate it based on the existing budget, but if the budget were to go up, hired contractors and consultants, you would use that same mechanism. What I'd strongly encourage is that you don't have staff justifying agencies' existence every year, that we do set up a process next year, that would be an ongoing one if the board decides to continue on this endeavor.
But Well, and that amount will go down should anybody else participate as a JPA member. We would have to redistribute that accordingly and bank that for next year's membership. Not even need it for.
Chair, to your point about existing, about the staff at the agency's taking this on, as Brian has seen in my messages to him, he's welcome to take on and everything that we're doing here, and so is Juan and John. I think they're really looking for support and addressing things regionally. Whatever budget we do have for our personnel at CVAC, I think most of you know, that's based on actual hours spent. So if the organization doesn't spend much time doing much more than holding meetings and working with IID on some initiatives, you're not going to see us fully absorb that budget. And we certainly don't in some of the other agencies either.
And so right now, obviously, you're taking these ideas, these points that are being made into account. You're asking for support.
Just send us in a direction. Mayor, I think, has suggested, split it three ways and come back to us later.
Let's figure that out. Because I actually got to go back. I mean, give us options on those three ways. Obviously, all of us are going to have to go back to our county or to your cities.
The split three-way is some ways the easiest. We wouldn't necessarily have to come back.
No.
If you do the search on
the amount, we probably would.
It's up to you. We need to get paid. CVAC. That's my CVAC hat on. There's only so long CVAC should be. CVAC should be bearing the cost for what's only benefiting some of its members.
So question, that was why I asked the question on the Bermuda Dunes, because when you look at the member contributions by percentage, where La Quinta's 34%, which kicks it up to 172,000, Indio's 45, and the county's 21, that takes into account the global or just that?
Or Bermuda Dunes.
I'm not sure the focus on Bermuda Dunes, but it is for all county.
It was a metering estimate.
Unincorporated areas that are outside of the cities.
Okay.
So thousand bombs and
still say
thermal and everything else.
Equality or equally shared at 166 would be Quinta's motion.
Yes.
Well, I would have to ask that we look at equity, not equality, in this aspect. And I would prefer proportion. But I don't know the number. I don't know the numbers yet, though. So, I mean, do we need to actually decide on the numbers today?
Well, they've done all the work for us to get.
Well, you're asking for me to pay 166 versus less.
Or you can move approval of going at 85,000. That kicks Indio up to 243 and us to 171.
But I also want to be respectful of the fact that are you willing to pay that much? I'm not sure if we're all ready to make this decision now.
La Quinta, we can do that in La Quinta and make our commitment to be able to find a revenue source to continue to have CDPA function.
And, of course, the advantage of the surcharge is you're not reliant on your colleagues, perhaps, or back county, city of Indio, or city of La Quinta. If you did make a recommendation of the surcharge, we would work with IID and implement it. And now, it might take a couple of months. But it would not require a subsequent approval by your respective councils and board supervisors if that was required.
Let me ask staff, county level, give me 30 seconds to a minute here to figure
out. I don't think supervisor wants to have his residents get a surcharge on the bail.
It's not that.
Third right count check.
Not that at all.
It might be interesting to hear. The city of Indio did institute at least one surcharge, I think two. I don't believe, and there certainly was advertised, I don't believe in that case, which was a much larger surcharge, there was much comment from Indio ratepayers. Was there, Brian?
There wasn't.
And if we can't sell it to the ratepayer, then that's a question. And when you look at in terms of this goes back to what sort of proposals. The proposals might range from being a part of some of the solutions that Cameron outlined in terms of providing infrastructure out there. It might be setting up a solar program in our cities. It might be addressing differently low-income ratepayer needs in the Coachella Valley that might be different than those in the Imperial Valley. So a couple
questions. If we go with a surcharge and then somebody else joins our JPA, does that change? And or what if we term early? How does that money come back? Because IID is collecting that money on our behalf and managing that money based on our proposals that we're submitting to get work done. I think it's complicated. Again, it goes, back to
The surcharge, if additional members come in at the next opportunity, the surcharge, this surcharge, which call it a overhead, administrative support and overhead surcharge, we would approach IID again. If new members were to join, a surcharge would be applied to them as well, and the surcharge would be recalibrated in a future year based on the budget. The surcharge, this surcharge, call it an O&M surcharge, unless Jamie sees it differently, could be applied, and then each year there's a budget, that surcharge might adjust a little bit based on the budget. And this is the O&M budget. A separate surcharge, if we went the direction of the city of Indio, you went, there might be a surcharge for infrastructure.
Right.
And that would be a more significant surcharge.
And that that still may be needed.
And that may be just for two agencies and not the city of Indio, for example.
I'm just going to put it out there. Obviously, in good faith, and we want to move this along, quite frankly, and I want to get there. I'll figure out where I'm going to get the money, and let's go with the 166. Is that what your motion is? I'll second that motion. Because, look, I hear you, and, I mean, you already are paying quite a bit more. Obviously, you are as well, more than the county. Eventually, I'm going to get there one day. So, good faith, good will. Maybe I'll take out the UCI funds. I'll figure it out. But I'll second the motion if you're making the motion.
If I could just make a suggestion so we could get there. What if we came up with an amount right now to take care of some of these costs, a lower amount that would give folks a little bit of time to work with staff to see what's actually feasible, whether it's 166 or another number or a surcharge. As Lakeitha, I know you don't want to impose that right now. You'd rather absorb a surcharge for Indio, another one.
If we put a cap on 166, then I would agree to that. But I'm okay with the 166 if you want to go there now.
So if you guys want to go 166.
I would say, like we did before, we can approve it contingent upon should there be an opportunity, perhaps you work with CBAG, what that looks like if you have staff resources to contribute to change up the budget amount. But if we're just looking at or approved $500,000, assuming that we've got a year to do this and figure things out, people get a refund. Of a portion of it. Or bank. But at least it's here.
Yes.
It's not a formal calculation. It's got to go to the board and more agreements.
You need to take this back to your council.
No, I don't need to go back to the council. I just want to make sure it is feasible and it's equitable for everyone.
Well, I'm ready to go ahead and say I still for.
But we still have time to come back if need be. So I'll accept that motion. We have a second. And all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye, aye, aye.
any nays, abstentions? Motion passes.
And a comment, if you might. When we work with your staff, we're going to be also taking a hard look at the budget. And we'll come back with a proposal for potentially future years or an adjustment even this year. That that approach may be different than the one that you've approved. You're an openness to different approaches, and we'll certainly try to consider all of the factors that are at play here.
Yeah, and we'll continue to work with staff and make sure everything pans out. Brent?
Yeah.
All right.
Sounds good, Mike.
And
strong work, gentlemen.
And I feel like I'm superhero now.
Did
you got a vote, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
you know, that's great.
So we'll move to item 9, which is information, board attendance. Again, any public comments on non-agenda items?
No, Chair, none.
Okay, next item. Next meeting is the next meeting, August 25th at 3 p.m. And I will be here. If there's no further, this meeting is now adjourned.